Gardens here in the Northeast are pretty much dormant now. After all, today is the first official day of winter. But for Rosemary Veery, even a garden this time of year was a delight.
Well, I love the garden in winter, just almost as much as I do in the summer. And I find it's very satisfactory walking through, and then each month there's something slightly different.
Veery died in 2001 at age 82, but her garden at her house in the English Cotswolds was known far and wide. She also designed Elton John's garden, she gave gardening advice to Prince Charles, and she inspired many regular old gardeners, including a Manhattan lawyer named Barbara Paul Robinson, who has a high-pressure day job, but in her spare time likes to dig in the dirt at her home in Connecticut. A while back, Barbara took a sabbatical to see Rosemary at work. That experience led her to write a biography titled Rosemary Veery, The Life and Lessons of a Legendary Gardener. And as Barbara told me, Veery was also a prolific writer who published several books.
One important book was called The Garden in Winter, and when it came out, it was really an innovative message. It now seems rather obvious to us, but it said gardens can and should look beautiful in all the seasons, not just the growing season. So pay attention to structure and evergreens and berries and leaves and that sort of thing.
You know, one of the first things that struck me was Rosemary Veery was quite a late bloomer. You know, it wasn't after her children had grown, as you write, that her career took off. And in fact, is it fair to say that she didn't even really have a career before she had her gardening life and her gardening career?
Oh, absolutely no career. And, you know, the title of the book is The Life and Lessons of a Legendary Gardener. And I always say that one of her lessons really is for everyone, not just gardening people, and that is her example of coming to something quite late in her life, being self-taught, self-made, and at the end of her life, she's world famous. Now, we might not all achieve that, but it is an inspiration that we can have a sort of an important chapter late in our lives for everybody, I think, which is why I like her story so much.
Her prominence in the gardening world started because she had a house in the Cotswolds that became sort of a mandatory stop on garden tours. What was it about her garden that made so many people want to see it?
I think that a lot of factors, including, you know, luck and timing in terms of the economy picking up in England, the timing also being ripe in America for her message, the early 80s. Her first book came out in 1980. Her first book, by the way, came out when she was 62, and then she wrote 17 more in 20 years.
It's prolific.
So another quite inspiring example, since this is my first book. But anyway, she actually could have been a completely anonymous country lady, one of countless English ladies in the countryside, with a handsome house, not a palace. She wasn't titled. She wasn't aristocracy. Four children, very devoted to her church, her village, her husband. She hunted, meaning she rode horses across the fields after foxes. She taught her daughters at home. She loved tennis. So that could have been the end of her story, and we would never have heard of her. And so this gardening chapter coming late in her life was really her career, and she made the most of it.
And what turned her hobby into a career?
Partly her writing. She was a wonderful teacher. The other part of her garden that was so appealing, apart from its marvelous location in the heart of the English countryside, was that her house and garden were relatively human scale. The whole garden was less than 4 acres. And yet she, in this relatively small space, by herself, with the help of her and partnership of her architect, historian husband, created this marvelous, rich, beautiful garden with different parts and different features. But because of the scale, visitors could come and say, gosh, this is something I could achieve. And that, I think, is also one of her great lessons, that she did it by herself, and you too could do it.
Even though she was so admired and so in demand, your book gives the impression that she wasn't particularly warm. Tell us about her personality.
She was complicated, like most people. She could be completely charming. One lesson she always repeated was, it's a sin to be dull, and she never was. But she was very demanding of herself. She was a perfectionist. Her father was a military man, very disciplined, very hardworking, driven, really. And I think she could be hard on other people, especially those closest to her. But she also, unfortunately, turned to drink, and that sometimes aggravated her personal relationships. Mm.
And Barbara Robinson, you can speak personally about her personality because you actually did a sabbatical with her. You're a partner at a big Manhattan law firm, but you took, what, a month off to spend a time gardening with her in England?
Right. I had a once-in-a-lifetime sabbatical. Most law firms don't do that. By that time, I'd been gardening in northwestern Connecticut. To my surprise, it sort of sneaked up on me. I never intended to be a gardener. So by the time I had this once-in-a-lifetime sabbatical, I was really hungry for a little formal training and couldn't find a course. So a friend of mine said, well, why don't you see if you can go work in a great garden? And I wrote to the two most famous English women garden writers I had ever heard of, Rosemary Veery and Penelope Hobhouse, and they both said I could come. I spent the most time with Rosemary. I lived in her gardener's cottage. I worked really hard, and I had a wonderful time.
Barbara, you write that that sabbatical taught you more than just hardcore gardening skills. What else did you learn?
Well, first of all, for a lawyer, I learned to take risks, which isn't something lawyers are good at. As she would say, just get on with it. And learn from doing, which, of course, I had been also doing in my own garden. But I learned a lot of things from her, by example, about drive and focus and character and determination. Just a very, very inspiring figure. You said she wasn't warm. She could be the warmest, most engaging, delightful person you've ever met. And I think particularly Americans who met her saw only that side of her and adored her and treated her like royalty, which is why she loved coming here so much.
Any last words for the regular old backyard gardener with a little tiny plot of soil?
Well, I think her basic message was small, large, whatever style you choose, you too can do this. Somebody called her the great encourager, and I think she really was. And I can still hear her commanding all of us in her inimitable voice to just get on with it.
Barbara Paul Robinson is the author of a biography called Rosemary Veery, The Life and Lessons of a Legendary Gardener. Barbara, thanks for talking with us about your book.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Before we go, a quick preview of Monday's show. We'll be listening to some rare home recordings of jazz great Louis Armstrong with two Armstrong scholars, Matt Glazer of the Berklee College of Music and Ricky Riccardi of the Louis Armstrong House, a museum in New York City where Armstrong once lived with his wife. Glazer tells us that Armstrong was actually recording himself.
There was nothing that was off limits for him. He was a person who embraced all aspects of the human experience. So sometimes his wife would say, are you recording that? Maybe Ricky can allude to this a little bit more. It was like he'd walk around the house and in moments where maybe they weren't fully clothed and recording everything that was going on. And she would say, shut that thing off. Am I right about that, Ricky?
It's completely true. Probably our most requested tape. It's 1961 and it's Louis and Lucille. They had just had friends over for dinner and they're talking and drinking and telling dirty jokes. And afterwards, the friends leave. Louis is still recording. He makes it very clear that he is in the mood. And Lucille makes it very clear that she is not in the mood. So for about 10 minutes, they go back and forth. All 20 years of marriage comes out, and they're just throwing everything at each other. And then she realizes he's recording it. And she says, turn that thing off. Erase that tape. And his response sums everything up. He says, no, I'm doing it for posterity. And she responds, posterity my ass.
More from jazz great Louis Armstrong on Monday. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Please join us again Monday, Here and Now, and have a great weekend.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.